Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to the Michigan's 11th Congressional District Republican Committee and sponsored with WWJ News Radio 950. This is the 11th Congressional District Candidate Forum. All right, let's just get right into it. Opening statements. Lots were chosen before this debate to see who speaks first. Rocky Rutkowski, I can't never get that last name correct.
Rocky Rutkowski.
There you go. First opening statement, please.
Well, it's truly my pleasure to be here. Thank you to the city of Livonia for opening up their beautiful city council chambers and the so many of you that could have been almost anywhere tonight, but you chose here. You know, what's interesting is we all probably have heard that Gallup released a poll that 18% of Congress, has an 18% approval rating. Why is that? Because candidates run and say one thing and put out these beautiful advertisements saying one thing, but when they get to Washington, they do another. Here's my promise to you, the same promise I gave to the soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines that I served with in war, that I will never let you down. I went to a chiropractor once upon a time and took an x-ray of my back, and I learned that I actually do have a spine and a backbone. A spine and backbone enough to stand up against sanctuary cities and do something about it. Because I'm just as frustrated with Republicans in office as I am with Democrats. Otherwise, I wouldn't be running. I'd be voting for one of these people. That's the important difference. I've served in the military. I've served in political office once a long time ago.
All right.
And now I'm here to serve you.
Thank you, Rocky. All right. Next, Kerry Bentivoglio. Opening statement, please, Kerry.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, just like take a few seconds here, if you're a believer in faith, and pray for our president that he's successful in Singapore and we can start the ball rolling and make sure that we get rid of as many nuclear weapons as we can on this planet. But I'd also like to thank the 11th CDRC and Deb and her team for putting this together. And thank you folks for coming out tonight. The reason I'm running is because, it's a job undone. The last time I served in Congress, got 100% score for cutting government waste. How many of you want to get rid of government waste? Yeah, if you're a Republican, you should be raising your hand. I was rated second most transparent member of Congress. How many of you think transparency in Congress is important? You should all be raising your hands if you're a Republican. Transparency is a good thing. I'd like to go back and do it again. I was the first-term congressman in 50 years to pass three pieces of legislation in the House of Representatives. I think we were very effective and very successful, and it was a bit interrupted, but I'd like to go back and do it again. Thank you.
Thank you, Kerry Bentivoglio. Thank you. All right, Mike Kowal, next.
Thank you, and I want to thank the City of Livonia and all that put this together, and thank you, Charlie, for hosting this tonight. You know, it's very important that whoever we put into this office has really deep roots into the community. My family's been in this area, this region of Michigan, for well over 100 years. When they migrated here, they came and they did it the right way. My grandmother came through Ellis Island, my grandfather came through Canada via Poland, and they did everything the right way and they assimilated into the community. And that's what we need to push forward here with people coming in as of now. We need to build a wall. We need to get fair trade. We can't get bowled over by the countries like China and even our neighbors to the north, Canada. It's the unbalanced trade is not a good thing for us. What we need is truly fair trade, but equal trade. So I want to make sure that this happens, and we need to stay on top of the technology here, especially here in Michigan. We're now number one in research and development for the autonomous vehicles. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Mike Kowal. Lena Epstein.
Thank you so much. I'm Lena Epstein, running to be your next congresswoman. I love nights like tonight. I hope that everybody has a great time. And when you walk away, I hope that when you think about Lena Epstein, you remember that this is a woman that's uniquely qualified to serve our district at a time when we are divided, when DC is toxic and dysfunctional, I come from the world outside of politics, my friends. I am not a politician. I've been in the private sector my whole life and haunted by career politicians, respectfully, on both sides of the aisle that regulate on issues of taxation, regulation, healthcare mandates, individuals who might be well-intended but are ill-equipped to serve. I had the great honor of serving as President Trump's statewide co-chair. I think my mic is out. I had the great honor of serving as President Trump's statewide co-chair for the 2016 presidential election. I am the America First candidate in this race. And as a wife and a mother, this fight is personal. And I look forward to earning your vote tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Lita Epstein. All right, Clint Kestel, opening statement.
Well, good evening and thank you all. My name is Clint Kestel, and really it's an honor to be here. We have great people here that are standing at this table, sitting at this table. But the bottom line is we don't disagree about a whole lot when it comes to issues. But in this race, the Democrats are charged up. They're charged up to win the 11th district. And I'm the one who has been battle tested as a state representative in the 39th district. Some of the others, one has been a three-time loser, last three times on the ballot. One's a defeated congressman. One is a former lobbyist. One has failed to show up after being appointed to a board by the governor 87% of the time. And I only say that because the Democrats will use that and will win, and Nancy Pelosi will have the gavel. I'm a former prosecutor. I've fought for protecting children, seniors, our Constitution. I've been in the chairman of the Law and Justice Committee where we handled the debacle of MSU. We're looking at fixing our mental health system, the broken system, and fighting opioid abuse. I will be able to beat the Democrats come November. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Clint Kestel. All right. I don't care. A little applause is probably okay. If in moderation, it's okay. All right. Question and answer time. Well, this is history being made in a couple of hours. Literally, President Trump will be sitting down with the leader of North Korea. First time it ever happened, ever. Clint Kestel, can the U.S. really trust Kim Jong-un?
Well, it's up to us to have conviction to make sure we put policies in place that we can hold Kim Jong-un accountable. I don't think we could trust him as far as we could see it from here to North Korea. But the bottom line is it's time to make sure that we fix the problem between North Korea, South Korea, and that we make sure that North Korea does not have their nuclear proliferation.
Rocky, rebuttal. What really defines success in North Korea? Is this going to be a success or failure? Can we measure this?
Yes, absolutely we can measure this. In the military, we have what's called complete and verifiable inspections, and that's what the State Department, using the diplomacy of the State Department, the defense side of the military, and of course our development side of USAID or the power of the U.S. economy, we can do this by implementing complete and verifiable inspections. That's the only way.
All right, thank you. Well, it looks like there's some agreement there, but if North Korea, if the meeting is a success, should the president meet perhaps with other world leaders, like Russian President Putin or perhaps Syrian President Assad? Lena Epstein.
Absolutely. One of the reasons I got behind then-candidate Trump is because he had a proven record in the private sector of putting deals together. He had a proven record of building things, of fixing infrastructure, and following through on commitments that he made. President Trump is following through on the commitments that he made to put America first, and part of that is the willingness to meet with world leaders like Kim Jong-un, and I'm very, very proud to support a president that does that. I would encourage him and not be surprised if he does meet with other world leaders. This is exactly the type of president that we need, somebody who will be willing to make deals, to have conversations with world leaders, and I would support him in his efforts to do that.
Carrie Bontevoglio, rebuttal?
I love his out-of-the-box thinking. He's not following traditional D.C. swamp tactics. I think he's made some promises, and he's kept those promises, and I'm fully behind him in his efforts to stop North Korea's nuclear ambitions. I believe it's a process. It's going to take a little more than this meeting, but I'm all behind him. I'm a big fan of anything that keeps keeps us off the battlefield.
All right, looks like some more meetings in place there. All right, next question. Should the United States continue to participate in NAFTA? And if not, do we risk alienating ourselves with our closest allies? Rocky.
We should participate in NAFTA only if both Canada and Mexico come to the table and reduce any types of tariffs. Now, I'm a free trader, but it has to be a fair trade. We cannot be free trading with countries when they actually put tariffs on at a second level, states or on specific products that we're not looking at. The only way we can participate in these types of treaties is if they're fairly enforced. And what the president has done, I applaud. We've got to stand up, especially to China. I'm a little bit disappointed with the ZTE decision, which is something that is a national security decision that the military should be watching. But I truly believe that as a country, we need to start using our economy to put America first. And one of the candidates said that they're the America First candidate. I think we're all America First candidates. I think I was the first one to be the America First candidate and to stand up to support our economy and our workers here in this country.
All right. Thank you. Rebuttal, Mike Cole.
Well, absolutely. You know, it's imperative that we get a fair trade deal out of it. Currently, what's happening is you're seeing goods being sent in from China. They land in Canada. They take them in a container. They go to cities like Winnipeg. They break the containers down, and they're a dress that's made overseas. They put a Canadian belt on it, and it becomes a fair trade, you know, product where there's no tariffs being paid. We need to make sure that whatever they do to us, that the same thing is done to them. It's very simple. Apply the same regulations to them as what they apply to us.
All right, thank you. Next question. Speaking of our allies, if you support President Trump's use of the wall on the Mexican border, which I think I see some heads shaking, doesn't that put a strain on our relationship with Mexico? Carrie Buntivoglio.
Not at all. Not at all. In fact, it's not just the wall. I've said it before. It must be a multi-dimensional wall. We have to make sure that we know who's coming into our country. They fly over. I've toured the border. They dig tunnels under. We have to enforce it in a multi-dimensional manner. Also, the people coming into this country to overstay their visa, there should be a way where they can renew that based on the law, as long as they follow the law. And I think it actually will improve relations with Mexico.
How is it going to improve relations with Mexico if we put a wall there?
Well, if you don't, now we're getting, here's the one thing that I think Louis Gohmert said. He said when the one thing that President Reagan, the one mistake he made, we all love Ronald Reagan, was that it was the amnesty thing. And now we see California as blue. And look what's going on in California. If we want California all over the United States, then I think we have to draw the line, put up a wall. And yeah, I think they'll respect force or more assertive diplomacy.
Let me go the other end. Lena.
Thank you, Charlie. Right now, there is an open border between the United States and Mexico. Only God truly knows what is going in between our two nations. Human beings are being trafficked. Heroin and fentanyl are being sent from the Sinaloa Mountains, even though El Chapo is in prison. The Sinaloa cartel is rich and funded and sending drugs that are going to ultimately kill Michigan citizens and citizens across this country. When President Trump talks about the wall, he's serious about it. And as a future congresswoman from this district, so am I. I support the building of the wall in order to keep America safe.
All right, thank you. All right, we'll have a little more time for some of these questions in this open forum round here. Let's try another question here. On that same line, would you support allowing more foreign workers in this country for seasonal-type jobs? It is an issue. Mike Cole.
It's presented a real problem, especially in the western states for ag manufacturing. Even here in Michigan during picking season, during cherry time and apples, we have to get that product off the trees and into the marketplace pretty quickly. There could be a system set up. It would have to be a lot of checks and balances in place, because you just don't want a carte blanche, open the borders and let people come through. but there's got to be a verifiable way of determining when they come in and when they go home. Because there are some jobs here that's very difficult for the farmers to find people to fulfill.
So where's the balance? Where's the balance there?
Well, there has to be a system set up where they would come and they would check in. The manufacturer, the farmer would have to report that these people showed up to work. They would have to report when they are done. They would have to check in at the border when they leave. So it's all things that can be verified.
All right. Clint Kesto, you agree with that?
Yeah, there has to be verification. The system is so broken. And we need people that are going to go to Washington, show up, get the job done, and find solutions. And here's the thing. We have the technology to be able to do this. We do it with other skilled workers that are coming in, foreign workers that are coming in. They're here for a certain time. They're held accountable through their employer. They're also held accountable through the system. In the past, we had people come here and they had sponsors as well. I mean, all this can be created in a system that works. So when you're talking about for the ag industry, short-term migration for skilled labor, I think there's absolutely a way to do it. But people have to get to work, start grinding, and find solutions. And I would do that.
All right. Hold on. We'll have plenty of time for that, more of that, a little bit later on. Let me try another question here. I do want to focus on policy, but this is something that people might know about. Mr. Bentivoglio, with Rocky having a rebuttal, can you explain why you are suing your opponent for $10 million, as I understand it, for engaging in, and I'm quoting from a complaint here, a malicious defamation campaign telling multiple third parties that your military record is fraudulent and fake? Did you file a lawsuit like that against Rocky?
Excuse me, I thought we were supposed to not throw knives or downgrade another opponent at this debate.
But you sued Rocky.
That's true, it's public
record. Isn't that a knife?
Well, that's public record, but you said here. But if you want, anybody wants, you can see the public record. It's a lawsuit, and yes, we did do that.
Is it still ongoing?
Yes, sir.
What did Rocky do wrong?
Well, first of all, six years ago, he went on the radio and he accused me of not serving in Vietnam, not having the awards I have, and he's continued. So we said enough is enough. You know, you can call me a reindeer farmer, Santa impersonator, all those wonderful things that we did for the last 20 years, but when you go after my family or my military record, I draw the line.
Rocky, I'm assuming you don't agree with that. Although,
no, I don't.
In your past, you have filed other lawsuits similar to Mr.
Here's the difference, Charlie.
What's the difference?
Here's the difference. And again, I agree with Kerry on this point that I'm not going to throw arrows here in front of our debate public, but I will share this much, that I served 26 and a half years in the military, both enlisted and commissioned service. When someone tells me publicly, and there are some witnesses in this room that were witnesses to this, that they earned medals that they did not earn, I will call the card out on them. I will stand up for those brothers and sisters that I lost in the military, that I lost in service. Nine in combat and two to suicide. When someone tells me they've earned an award, they better back it up. I never said that Mr. Bentivoglio did not serve in Vietnam. I never made those comments. What I did say, that he needs to stop puffering his military service publicly. And I know this shouldn't be a topic publicly, and I'm sad that this has become a topic publicly, but I have spoken to him and his campaign right. workers privately.
All right,
I'm sad that this has become a public issue.
But it is a public issue, though, and I just want to get it out so we can clear the air.
Sir.
Yes.
6 years ago.
30 seconds.
When I ran for office, the same issue came up. We, as part of our press packet, we gave all the press, we posted online, my DD Form 214. Anybody in the military knows what a DD Form 214, that's your official record of it. And that's been there, so it shouldn't have never become an issue, and it still is. So.
Okay. All right.
You got to give me this question.
15
Mr.
seconds.
Bentivoglio,
15
did you,
seconds.
Did you,
I get
did
one.
You earn 3 Purple Hearts and a Silver Star in Vietnam?
That's a lie.
Did you earn a Silver Star in 3
All right, let's hold that thought. Let me go to another question. Let's go to another group. Clint Kesto, in your opening statement, you mentioned a candidate, but not by name, someone that was, I believe, appointed to a position, didn't serve. Who are you referring to, and what was that about?
I think that person is here on this table, and she knows who she is. She was appointed by Governor Snyder to the Children's Trust Fund, doesn't show up 87% of the time, calls it in. Look, you can't phone it into Washington. I'm sorry. You just can't do it.
What didn't she... Well, I think we now know who it is. What didn't she do?
She didn't appear. I mean, she didn't take herself to the board meetings. This is a board appointed to protect children that have been abused, to set up the policies in place, to put them forward. And look, it's great to be appointed. It's probably a great honor. But sometimes you also have to grind and do the work.
So it was a great honor to be asked by Governor Rick Snyder to serve as a member of the Child Abuse and Neglect Prevention Board. The current president of the Children's Trust Fund called me recently and thanked me for my service. This organization has amassed leaders, private sector individuals that work from early in the morning until late in the evening, growing their business, creating jobs, and growing the gross domestic product. My performance was recognized by Governor Snyder. He thanked me for my commitment to that organization. Because I'm not a career politician, I don't go from meeting to meeting in Lansing like my opponent. Ultimately, what I have done for the Children's Trust Fund, I'm extremely proud of. I brought awareness to Southeast Michigan of this phenomenal public-private partnership to help our children.
But let me ask you this, though. Is the issue not what you've done?
And I called in during board meetings.
But is the issue attendance on meetings?
No, sir. There are many members. They have amassed a group of private sector board members, many of whom call into the meetings. Anybody that works in the private sector that serves as a volunteer in an organization like this is welcome to call in, and I have been recognized by both the president of the Children's Trust Fund and the governor of Michigan for my contributions, and I'm very, most of all, it's a tremendous organization, and it was an honor to serve, and I'm very sad right now that there's somebody on this stage that is so desperate that he feels that he needs to attack me, and it is unfounded and unsubstantiated,
All right.
And the voters deserve better.
All right. Clint Kestel, 15-second response. It seems like she did the work.
Well, it's absolutely substantiated that she didn't show up, and being in Lansing, I was a prosecutor. That's what my profession was. Okay, when I was elected, yes, you go meeting to meeting because you're there to do the job. And that's what the job entails, being there in person. I have a 100% record roll call vote. You can't phone it in to Washington when you're trying to vote.
15 seconds. Lena.
At the end of the day, tonight, it is my goal to articulate a clear and concise plan for the future. You, the citizens of the 11th District, is what tonight is about. Not negativity, and I'm very sorry that Clint Kestel is struggling so much that he feels that he needs to attack a beautiful record.
Let's change topics now. This is just a yes or no answer. Yes or no answer.
Wait, what about Mike?
I'm getting to him.
We'll get you later.
Five is just
yeah,
so
I'm
unfair.
I'm getting to him. You're in a good spot. Just stay there, okay?
Move forward. Come on, Charlie.
I'm happy where I am, Charlie.
Yeah, I know.
Ben
Carson. Listen, here's the deal. Do you support allowing Mike Kowal small amounts of marijuana for recreational use? Yes or no?
No.
Lena?
My opinion on it doesn't matter because how I'm going to vote at the ballot at the state issue is personal.
Yes or
I'm
no?
Gonna be...
Yes or no?
Repeat the question, please.
Yes. Do you support allowing small amounts of marijuana for recreational use?
No.
Kerry Benevolio?
No.
Clint?
No.
Rocky?
No.
Okay, all right. Let me go back. All right, let me do this here. Okay, 30 seconds each. I'm going to go down the line, okay? Give Education Secretary Betsy DeVos a letter grade, and then comment on what the federal government's role, what should the role of the federal government be in education. It's quick. Mike Kowal.
B. And I don't think the federal government should be involved in education at all. That should be left up to the state.
Lena.
B, and if given the opportunity, I would like to abolish the Department of Education. Thank you.
Clint.
I'm going to go C, because you're there. Let's get the job done. Let's end the Department of Ed. Bring the power back to the states.
Rocky.
I would say C as well. I truly believe that the money needs to come back to the classrooms and back to the states.
All right. Kerry.
As the only teacher experience here, I'd like to get rid of the Department of Education and block grant the money back to the states.
And a letter grade for Betsy DeVos.
Oh.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Probably a C.
A C.
Probably a C.
Okay. Let's do this again. I like this. One more time, okay? Yep. Different question.
O would be fine, too.
Should a discussion on school safety include allowing qualified teachers to carry weapons in school? Kerry.
Well, I'm was trained in SWAT, and that was a school teacher, and yeah, I would be probably your best choice. I was better trained than the policemen that we had. So I think, yes, if they're well-trained and know what they're doing, there's a lot of teachers that are more than qualified. Thank you.
Thank you. Michael.
The conversation's already been taking place in Lansing. Overwhelmingly, most teachers do not want to carry guns in the classrooms. We're trying to figure out ways now to get more police officers into those classrooms that are well-suited for protecting kids in these combat situations.
So that's a no.
That would be, we've had that conversation, and they don't want to carry guns.
Okay. All right. Rocky.
I favor school marshals. I favor, like Mike said, retired police officers, military retired vets, and individuals that are well-trained that can also discipline students, because you've got a lot of individual teachers. If you go on YouTube,
but I don't want to cut you off, but I will. I want to focus on assuming it's a discussion on school safety.
Yeah.
Should the discussion include the reality that a qualified teacher should be able to carry a weapon?
Charlie, go to YouTube and punch in "teacher on student violence" or "student on teacher violence." If that gun gets in the hand of a student that is violent against a teacher, or a teacher pushing violence against a student, we've got a problem. Mm-hmm. It needs to be a third-party source. It needs to be a school marshal.
Okay. Lena.
You're asking us questions about state matters, Charlie, and what we are, all of us are running to be United States Congressperson. So I'd like to say that. But I will say, as somebody who has a daughter, when I make a decision about where to send her to school, I would like to see a sign that says, staff is trained and ready to protect students, instead of a sign that says this is a gun-free zone. I support. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Clint. Did I miss? Clint.
Yeah. You know, they should be armed if they are trained and if they want to, in their discretion. We could talk about if there's an issue, student on teacher, teacher on teacher, but that can happen with a marshal too, or anyone there. Let's be real here, folks. In Florida, there was a sheriff deputy outside who did not go in. Did not go in. Wouldn't you want to have a trained teacher that was responsible, that has received the proper training to be in that environment, to be there to protect our children, my two children, Lena's child, all of our children and grandchildren in here?
All right. Let's try a different question now. The cycle of poverty continues to wreak havoc in many minority communities, especially in the Black community, and especially with regard to quality health care. So what would be your plan to kind of break that cycle, Rocky?
Well, obviously, I started by talking about fraud in Medicare and Medicaid and a lot of our campaign. There's a lot of fraud in Medicare and Medicaid where the dollars are not spent towards health care but spent on doctors defrauding the system. So we're automatically taking money out of the system that could be helping individuals in the inner cities or in areas of poverty. Another interesting thing is what President Trump has recently done is improving the job market. We have seen the best job market for not, I won't just say minorities, but all disadvantaged individuals. The better the job market is, the better people have an opportunity to lift themselves out of poverty.
Okay, thank you. A 30-second rebuttal, Clint.
Simple. Let's get some more skilled trades into our urban areas and our urban schools. Let's develop more job programs for those people that have gone into the system in terms of being incarcerated. Let's arm them with the right skills so that when they come out, they can get a job. And let's cater to those people who are actually the people hiring jobs, because they know the type of talent that they want, rather than having our schools dictate what type of people they're going to produce in terms of the skills. That's the plan I would use. We could do it from the federal level, block grants to the state side, get those skilled labor. We're doing it in the state of Michigan, and we could do it, I think, nationwide.
All right. Next question.
May I answer the question, Charlie?
No.
Okay.
No, that's just a quest Q&A. We'll get it later.
Sure.
I know. It's okay. But you can take this one. Well, no, let me try this. Some say Social Security will be broken by 2033. I guess an easy question, how do you fix it? And if extending the retirement age is a way to do that, isn't that unfair to those earning a living through physical labor? Okay, Lena, go ahead.
I recently proposed something that Ronald Reagan proposed in the 80s. I don't know if anybody remembers that, but he did propose moving the retirement age from 67 to 70 over 20 years. The seniors that are receiving Social Security and have paid into this program must receive the money that they paid into and were committed to receive. I'm 37 years old. My husband is 40. We have time over the next 20 years to prepare for our retirement. We have career politicians on both sides of the aisle that have supported unfunded mandates. We have a $7 trillion shortfall, which is Social Security, with no solution. I'm proposing a very conservative solution, which ultimately addresses $3.5 trillion of the $7 trillion. I don't have a solution for the other $3.5 trillion, but it's my belief that we can successfully move the age from 67 to 70 over the next 20 years. My friends in the room who are seniors, you must receive your Social Security that you paid into and that you need now, and that is my promise to you as a future congresswoman from the 11th District.
All right. Thank you, Lena. Mike Colwell, rebuttal?
Well, I don't think there's much of a rebuttal as there is my way of looking at it. You can take people that are about 40 years old and put them into the age group that would retire when they're 70. Anybody from 40 and up and those collecting Social Security, leave them alone. There was a really good article in the Wall Street Journal the other day where these actuarials were looking at, and they said if we went to that type of a system, that the Social Security would be fine. But the problem is we have a tendency in this country when people come in, illegal immigrants come in, and they give them Social Security. They come in, they give them welfare. They come in and they give them medical care. That's all leeching off the Social Security system. We need to stop that and use it for what it was originally intended.
All right, thank you. In a related issue, should there be any limitations on deporting, and in particular, Chaldeans? In other words, should those convicted of violent crimes be allowed to stay in the country? Let's go to Clint Kesto.
Yes. Well, it's an issue I look at like this. We're the United States of America. We're the country that says, bring your those that need, are looking for liberty and freedom here, and we open our arms. And then we get folks in here and they commit crimes. But I don't think that we're the country that says we're going to send people off to their death in another country. And I don't care if it's the Chaldeans or anyone else. In that country where you're specifically targeted for a certain reason, whether it be political or religious in nature, in this case the Chaldeans that came from Iraq are being targeted by ISIS and other radical terrorists out there, I don't think that the United States of America is a country that says, we're going to drop you off over there and good luck, you may get beheaded. So with that, I'm not going to limit it to just them, but when there are those circumstances, I don't think that that's what our country stands for.
All right. Carrie Bentivoglio, could you weigh in on that one? And maybe is President Trump acting appropriately with regard to, in particular, the Chaldean issue, but those people that would be deported otherwise?
Referring to...
Same question.
Same question. Well, he's right. Chaldeans are Christians from the Middle East. And if you send them back to Iraq, there's already a minority there. They're burning Christian churches. They're beheading Christians, not just in Iraq, but in Syria and elsewhere. I agree with them. If somebody commits a crime that maybe in this country gets a 5-year, 10-year sentence, maybe they should do their 5-10 years here and remain a citizen. Because if you do send them back, I know for a fact they will be punished severely. And that's a death sentence.
All right.
So I have to agree with Representative Clint Kesto.
Yeah, Clint Kesto. All right. That's the end of the Q&A round. Let's open this up a little bit now. For the next couple of minutes, I'm going to throw out a topic. I'll pick someone to start. And then, kind of like what we do on a popular television show, we just kind of talk about the issue.
Which one's that, Chair?
I don't know. But let it rip. I hope anybody doesn't mind. Oh, WWJ as well. There's my boss in the background. But here's the deal. Let's start this one. President Trump called the Canadian Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, dishonest and weak at this last week's G7 meeting. Does that rhetoric make for good diplomacy, Lena?
You bet. President Trump. President Trump is the first president in modern history who has really been willing to put the United States first. If you scorn us as soon as we get into an airplane and take off, you better believe that Mr. Trump is going to remember that. I support a strong position against those who criticize the United States.
But isn't there a difference in being strong and being belittling?
The United States citizens elected a man, Donald Trump, who was scrappy, who was hardworking, who spoke in plain English and would unapologetically put our country first, just as other countries have put them first, and I stand behind that.
Kerry, do you agree with that?
Yeah, Trudeau, he said he's all about Canada and he's going to put Canada first. Why can't our president do what he's doing and say, hey, we're putting America first?
I don't think that's
the
question.
You're weak, he called him out. You didn't stand up for Canadians in the meeting, Mr. President Trudeau, whatever his name is.
Trudeau.
Maybe Trudeau.
Rocky.
He's Canadian. You know.
Listen, I support the president.
Thanks.
I was his chair for veterans throughout the state of Michigan and did a lot for his campaign. I've been to the White House now 4 times at his invite, and I'm proud of that. But I will tell you, the thing that I hear the most at the doors when knocking on doors in Livonia, in Plymouth, in Northville, Novi, or Troy, I hear, I support the president. I'm 100% on board with America First agenda, just like I am. But I wish he would stop tweeting so much. And that's the issue.
Clint Kestel?
At the end of the day, yes, as far as diplomacy and rhetoric, people could take offense, but let's look at the bottom line. The bottom line is, are you getting the job done? Are you putting America first? Are there more jobs? Do we have a 3.8% unemployment rate like Jeff Sackler was talking about? Those are the things I think that are most important. This Twitter, yeah, it could rub people the wrong way. Is it going to affect diplomacy? I don't know. Let's figure it out.
Is this the bottom line? Whatever happens to bottom line, then, Michael?
Well, it could affect the bottom line. Canada's our biggest trading partner. We don't want to start a trade war with them. But the trade that's going on now is so imbalanced. Just on milk alone, I think I heard today it was like 200-some-odd% difference that if we're shipping milk to Canada.
270.
If they send it here, it's just not fair.
Lena? You want to stop? Another topic? Let's try another topic.
I would say this, though, that President Trump, I know you want to talk specifically about Trudeau, but President Trump has needed Twitter to speak effectively with us, his base, okay? I have served as, thank you. President Trump has had great difficulty with the media getting a fair shake and allowing the facts of his administration to come forward. And so while people might criticize his banter, I actually think that's one of his greatest charms. And I want to encourage that, and I want to support him in Congress. Thank you.
Let's try this. Everyone knows President Trump says, drain the swamp, or how do you do? I want to know, Clint Kestel, what's the swamp, and how or what do you think should be drained? If you're in Congress, where's the swamp, assuming that's what it is? How are you going to drain the swamp? And do you agree with that language again?
Yeah, I do. And in fact, I think that the swamp is not just in Congress, in Washington. It's probably in every capital city because it's the large bureaucracy. And the large bureaucracy gets built up also by the legislators. So the legislators need to rein back that power and authority. In the Michigan House, I've done it with multiple bills that are out there because those departments think that they have carte blanche authority to do whatever they want.
And are you saying the Michigan House is a swamp?
No.
Oh.
Sure.
The bureaucrats that are there are, though, and we're continuing to rein them back. We see it day in and day out with great Republican leadership in the Senate, House, and with our governor.
Clint Kestel, you were in the swamp at one point in time.
I'm over here.
I'm not Clint Kestel.
Gary, I'm sorry, Gary.
Right.
Gary, sorry.
That's all right. I got Trudeau's
You got Trudeau.
Wrong,
I got
you. No problem.
All right. Sorry about that.
It's deeper than we think because having been an outsider looking in than an insider looking inside, I got to see it. You have government bureaucrats that are neither transparent or accountable. You can't fire them. There was a phrase coined when I was asking some bureaucrats, lawyer bureaucrats in Washington, D.C., and they kept avoiding a due date that was mandated by law, and we called it the verbal moonwalk. It sounded like they were getting somewhere, but we weren't. We were really going backwards.
Rocky?
Yeah, there is a swamp. It's in Washington. It's in Lansing, like Clint mentioned, and at most of the state capitals. In Washington, you know what the swamp is? It's the legislators, it's the lobbyists, it's the money in politics. Get the money out of politics, you have better representation.
You're not going to take it, you're not going to take campaign contributions?
Bring term limits to Washington. Bring term limits to Washington, you get better representation. Most importantly, I'm the only one that would have never voted for the omnibus bill. The omnibus bill is the swamp. That's $1.3 trillion more money on top of the national debt.
Kerry?
No, that's not true. I actually had the opportunity, and I never voted for an omnibus bill. I believe in single-issue bills, and I will not vote to fund Planned Parenthood.
The question about the swamp.
Yes.
The swamp effectively, and I continue to try to fully understand, and it will be my responsibility to share with the public the details of what the swamp is once I get there. But the swamp inherently is career politicians on both sides of the aisle that look to D.C. or Lansing or even Oakland County, for that matter, for careers, for jobs. That is dangerous when we have elected officials, maybe nice, maybe hardworking, maybe love the country, but effectively ill-prepared to legislate on issues that will affect 300 million people. These career politicians are the swamp and absolutely everything that I will fight against once elected to Washington to
serve. Let me try. You want to talk about the swamp, Mike? I have a different question for you.
The swamp is, it's like Kerry was saying, the swamp is a lot of the bureaucrats that are there. We have a phrase that we've coined in Lansing. It's called spin cycle. And they'll put you on spin cycle because they know you're going to be termed out in a very short period of time,
right,
and you never get anything accomplished. And that's the worst part of it. And I see the same thing going on in D.C. I've since then learned how to deal with that, and it's called going into the appropriations budget, finding their salary, and line-iting them out of the budget. Boy, do you get their attention then.
Kerry?
A common phrase from a bureaucrat in Washington, D.C. is, we were here before you got here, we'll be here after you're gone.
I've had him say that to me, too.
There you go. Lena, pick a candidate. Ask that candidate a question. Because I want to differentiate between your view on any issue and a candidate here.
Would it be okay if I asked a voter what matters to them instead of asking an opponent?
Well, that'd be too easy. No, I want you to distinguish between the
sure.
The voters want to differentiate.
I'd be happy to.
Okay.
I'd be happy to.
Okay.
Senator Kowal.
See.
You voted to expand Medicaid.
Yep.
Can you explain that to the voters? Because as a voter, that really, really made me disappointed.
Well, here's what's happened. The money was leaving the state. The money was going away. It was going to go into that vast chasm in Washington, D.C. We had an opportunity to bring that money back to Michigan and go with Healthy Michigan. And we accomplished two things. One, the businesses of the state of Michigan were not going to get charged twice for the same thing, because when you went to the hospital without any type of health care, that hospital had to take care of you no matter what you had. They couldn't put you out in the back 40. So they had to take care of you. And guess where that money came from, Lena? It came from companies like mine, companies like your family's company, companies like Rocky's and Kesto's, and even the reindeer farm. So what we did was we did it in such a way that now it's working.
All
even
right.
President Trump is talking about expanding that into other states.
Lena, is that a fair response?
I say that with great respect, sir. I completely disagree with the choice that you make, and it really has been a great problem for Michigan residents.
All right, let's try to. Let's try Kerry Bentivoglio. Ask another candidate, anybody you want, a question that would differentiate you on any issue.
We don't have enough time.
Enough time. Well, you're not curious about any of them?
Say that again. Ask the question
again. Are you curious about any of them? Any issue that differentiates
you? No, I have. We've done our opposition research. I know everything I need to know about them. That's why I'm running.
All right. Rocky, you must have a question for someone on this panel.
I'm really not interested. I've also researched the candidates. I think they're good people. I really do. We differ on a lot of things. I come from a perspective of the military, the business world, and politics. And that's what separates me, and I would rather not ask them a question. I concur with what Lena said. I'd rather hear what the voters have to say.
Clint?
Well, I'll take it then. I want to ask Lena a question. Lena, you don't live in the 11th, and you were running for United States Senate, and you were so, with conviction, were saying that you are the only candidate to beat Debbie Stabenow. So what makes you change then? You don't live in the 11th, but you decide to run in the 11th when David Trott says he's not running.
I'm proud of my roots in Southeast Michigan. As the crow flies, I live right next to the 11th. My husband and I are happy to put the house up for sale if that's what the constituents would like. But in the end, Clint, for some reason, you're finding it very satisfying to attack me. And ultimately, it's my goal tonight to articulate a clear vision to you, the voters. When Congressman Trott announced that he was retiring, I was inundated by members of the Republican Party, the business community, the donors, and the grassroots asking me to move into the 11th congressional race because I was identified as the strongest general election candidate who would have the support of the base for the work that I did with the president and the support of the business community to fund an effective campaign in the most expensive district in Michigan. I took that responsibility very seriously, and I must tell you, it has been a wonderful experience being a candidate in the 11th Congressional District.
Let me get Clint, is that responsive to your question?
Well, first of all, it didn't even answer the question if she was going to beat Debbie Stabenow or not. Maybe she wasn't going to show up to all of those things, kind of like on the Children's Trust Fund.
All right, we're going to be nice, Lena.
I'm still a lady, and I am a professional. And I am extremely, extremely proud of the campaign that we are waging. We are leading, my friends, and we are going to continue to grow that lead. We have amassed the best talent in this country, and every single day I'm in the district listening to you. I'm listening to you. I was with Tracy today on the door, who was talking to me about how taxes have crippled her family.
Hold on.
Sure.
Okay, I think we got the, let's move on. Different. Rocky, do you want to say?
Yeah, I just, Lena, I apologize, but what you said is not true. Majority of the Republican Party now believes that you would be the weakest candidate running in this race, and from the party perspective and from the grassroots perspective. Now, I appreciate you running, and I appreciate you running in this district, but let's keep it truthful. That all of us have good qualities, all of us are good candidates running against the potential Democratic candidates that'll be running in the general election. But the most important thing, Clint did have a point, and I don't wish to belabor it, but you did drop from the state Senate, from the U.S. Senate race to the state House seat because this is an easier race that you thought you could win.
You don't get to put words in my mouth, Rocky.
Hold on. John Young that stated that.
Lena, hold on, Rocky. 30 seconds.
Political consultant.
30 seconds.
Nobody gets to put words in my mouth.
No, John Young.
Nobody gets to put words in my mouth.
Hold on. Lena.
What makes me most sad right now is that, Charlie, you wanted this to not be sparring. I was told when I took the lead in this race that I would be criticized. I was told that this would be possible. And guess what, my friends? I am tough. And I'm prepared for this, and that's okay. But ultimately, our responsibility tonight is to articulate a very clear message. We must put America first. We need to further cut taxes. Allow me, please.
10 seconds. Go ahead.
We need to address the immigration crisis in this country.
All right.
I am uniquely prepared to do that. And I'm disappointed by the hostility in this room because I don't think that you as the voters deserve that.
Okay, let's follow up on that issue. What I want to talk about now, an issue that we did not cover so far. What is an important issue that the voters should know about that we just haven't touched in this debate? Clint.
One of the most important issues, I think, is continuing on jobs, and jobs, and those three issues. And we could talk about immigration and our border security, our relationship with other countries, but it's our success in our country is grinding, working hard, and bringing those jobs in our country, making sure people are not on the government dole.
Rocky, an issue.
Sanctuary cities and the national debt.
What about the national debt?
If we don't deal with the national debt right now, and none of the candidates are really talking about that, but this is a cornerstone in our campaign. We have to get control of the national debt within the next year and a half. Otherwise, it will be too late, and we will have what happened to Greece. It's a very important issue because we will suffer.
Mike Cole?
Well, it's important that we get the national debt under control, and the only way that we do that, especially here in Michigan, is to stay on top of the technology that we're moving forward with right now. We are number one in the nation right now in manufacturing. We're number one in the nation and in the world in research and development. We have to keep that trend going here in this state. That employs people. It has a ripple effect of employing people, not necessarily in, say, the auto industry, but every one of us is affected by it.
Lena?
We have an opioid crisis in this community. I have met countless families who have lost people who have died to the opioid crisis. I've said this before. One of the first things that we can do at the federal level is to build that wall and stop the flow of heroin and fentanyl between our two countries. This is a personal issue. This is a community issue, and it's also a national issue that I look forward to addressing.
Gary?
Yeah, national debt, I believe, is number one issue. They touched on some very good points. We are the manufacturing capital, pretty much, in the United States. We're up there in the top three, I think. But the national debt really has the potential of ruining Social Security, all the benefits everybody gets. If you get even veterans benefits, retirement benefits, whatever the case may be, we have to put people back to work and start cutting spending. And I like to say, repeat one more time, 100% score for cutting government waste. But to be perfectly honest, I showed the wife the list. I said only 8 members of Congress out of 435. I'm at the top of the list. To be honest, she said, that's because they printed the list alphabetically.
This is a partisan. All right, thank you. It's a partisan question. Should the Obama administration be investigated for using the Justice Department to spy on the Trump campaign? Lena?
Yes.
Mike?
Absolutely.
Rocky?
Yes.
Clint?
Absolutely.
And Kerry?
Could you?
See, that's why I didn't ask the questions. I figured they're all going to
ask the question again. Repeat.
Should the Obama administration be investigated by the Justice Department for allegedly spying on Trump?
Well, they'd have to start investigating some Republicans as well, because Republicans are well known for doing that as well, sir.
We talked a little bit about our campaign finance reform. What's the problem with campaign finance as it exists today? Anybody?
All the dark money, all the interest money that can flood into a campaign, and you start to see that an individual could potentially buy a campaign, and I do not believe that this district can be bought. I do not believe that one individual or any individual should buy a campaign.
But the reality is you're going to raise...
Steyer is now putting $3.6 million into the Detroit media market for the general election. Tom Steyer doesn't live in Michigan. He lives in California.
This election cannot be bought. This election will be informed by the voters. When I was working on the Trump campaign, I worked with the grassroots. The grassroots will inform every election result. And I'm disappointed tonight by some of the hostility that came out of this group, because ultimately we are a community of love. We're a community of grace. We're a community of faith. And I believe that when the day the primary is over, that we will come together. We will, and I look forward to that day.
Mike?
Paul? Charlotte, there needs to be some reform, especially with, like Rocky said, the dark money. You're seeing a lot of the Democratic candidates right now. They're going to places like New York, California, and they're out there soliciting funds from all these different interest groups, some of which don't even have names, but they have some very dark places in their soul that just want to change the United States into more of a communist type nation.
Campaign finance reform, could you want to?
A lot of millionaires and billionaires out there are shifting their money around. We see it with George Soros and others. Probably some. I mean, you have some on our conservative side, but you know, as far as the hostility in this is a debate, a forum. You know, if we can't handle it in this room and it hasn't even gotten heated up yet, then you will not be able to handle it in November.
We've got about 6 minutes left, so here we go. All right, hold on. I want to go down the line. I just want one person that you would emulate if you went to Congress. It could be a congressman, a senator, state, some politician that you believe you'd like to model yourself after.
Mark Meadows.
Okay.
Yeah. I really started to like Tom Cotton. He's a young man, former military guy, doing a great job, new to the U.S. Senate.
Rocky?
Jim Jordan. Jordan from Ohio.
Okay, all right. Michael.
I like Jim Jordan from Ohio, but I also fashion myself after former Congressman Joe Nolenberg, just with his mannerisms and the way he handled himself as an individual.
Lena.
I admire Mike Lee from Utah. I think he's a tremendous leader. He's a United States Senator, but I would like to emulate him.
All right, thank you. All right. Now, closing argument. Gosh, it's closing arguments. It's closing statements. Right. Statements. We've already had the argument portion of the debate. They were randomly drawn before the debate. Lena Epstein, you give the first closing statement, please.
Thank you so much. How much time do I have? 60 seconds?
You have a minute.
A minute. We have a very serious decision to make in just under 60 days. And you are the voters. You are the people who will decide the election result. And while there is fighting and banter up here, ultimately, I am the best equipped, the strongest, the ablest, and the most experienced in the private sector to serve at a time when we are divided as a community. I will advance a conservative agenda once elected to Congress. And when I come knocking at your door, please open the door. I'm an extremely hardworking candidate, and I look forward to earning your vote. This election could never be bought. We are the most educated district in Michigan. We are gritty. We are scrappy. And I have that same tenacity and that same preparedness to serve at a time in our nation's history when we are divided. It will be my goal, as I said before, to lead with love and to lead with grace. We all have individual stories about what it means to be an American, and I believe that that dream is worth fighting for our children, for our children's children, and our children on board. God bless you. I'm Lena Epstein, and I humbly ask you for your vote. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Lena. Rocky.
I'm Rocky Rutschkowski, and we've had a very spirited debate tonight. But again, if you want a candidate that will actually not only say that they'll work on building the wall and securing our border and stopping sanctuary cities, vote for us. Vote for our campaign. If you want a candidate that will actually try to work and hard work for the making the tax cuts permanent, I ask for your support. But most importantly, let me make a commitment to you, because I don't want to be a congressman. I do not want to be a congressman. I want to be a representative. I have a four-year-old daughter that's sitting in the back with my wife. It is her that I want to make proud one day. When I serve in Washington, it will be to serve you, to respond to your calls at any time of the night. I pass out my cell phone. My cell phone number is 248-388-4664. Even if you've got insomnia, call me. I'd love to hear your story or what's on top of your mind. I ask you to visit our website at rockyworksforus.com. That's rockyworksforus.com, because Rutschkowski is way too hard to spell. I ask for your support, and thank you.
Thank you, Rocky. Clint Kestrel.
Thank you. Thank you all for being here. It's been a great time. I know it gets a little excited, but here's the bottom line. This 11th district is a competitive district. I won in the 39th district. For those that live in that area, it's a very competitive district. You have to have thick skin to go through all those elections. And to fight back against the Democrats, you need hard work. I've done that. As a former prosecutor, I served the people. As a state representative, I served the people. But I didn't just point out problems. We found solutions. We have the MyCares Task Force to address the issues of opioid abuse, to address the issues of our broken mental health system. Our child sexual assault reform that we did was tremendous in the state of Michigan because of that MSU debacle. But come November, you need a candidate who is going to win, someone who has proven that he can win. Someone who has proven to be there, to work hard, and to make sure he's working for you. I appreciate all of you. We were just endorsed by the Right to Life. I think all of the candidates here were. I've had a triple A rating with the NRA, and I will work to make sure we protect our Constitution. God bless all of you.
All right. Thank you, Clint Kestrel. Carrie Beltavoglio.
Thank you. Thank you all for being here today. And I want to read this. I saw it on an email recently. It says, old proverb that says, the person who says it can't be done should not interrupt the person doing it. A lot of people up here making promises. And there's a lot of people here that actually did it. 100% score for cutting government waste, second most transparent member of Congress, first-term congressman in 50 years that passed three pieces of legislation, one with 126 co-sponsors. We can have fun, and we can joke around, but we also need to work hard. I'm the only one up here that has that kind of record, that follows Republican principles. It's not just talk. I was interrupted in 113th Congress. I have a proven record earning two constituent awards for working for people like you. And every single bill we sponsored in Washington came from an idea or suggestion from people like you, not a DC lobbyist. I want to go back. I'm going to work hard, continue that report card that is out there. 93% conservative Republican voting record. God bless you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kerry. Michael.
Your Honor, and ladies and gentlemen of the jury. And you are going to be a jury. You're going to have to make a decision who you want to represent you in D.C. And you have to remember, the person that you send there, you want them to represent you to D.C., not D.C. to you. And that's one promise I will make to you, and that's the promise I made to all the constituents that I have currently. I have consistently won elections, consistently. Hard, tough, fought battles, both against Republicans in primaries and against Democrats in generals. And I'm the only one sitting up here that has consistently done that in the House and in the Senate. So I'm asking you to take a chance, do it one more time, talk to people, go to our website, MikeKowalForCongress.com. Take a look, learn more about me, learn more about what I stand for, and learn about our family, and learn where I want to take these United States. Thank you very much, and God bless all of you, and God bless America.
Thank you, Mike Kowal. Thank you, candidates. A round of applause. That'll conclude the debate. Thank you, WWJ. And the 11th Congressional Debate Candidate Forum is over. Thank you.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.